Health and Social Services on the 26th of February at 3:14 today. On the agenda today is HB 26, Medicaid for Adult Dental Service, and HB 2, Birth Certificate for Stillborn. It's the intent of the co-chairs to hear both bills introduced and presented today in testimony, some online, both bills, and then hold them for action later, later committee meetings. We'll start today with HB 26. Representative Hawker, if you would come forward. We have before us a CS, and the CS has been discussed with a sponsor, and I understand he's all right with it. Is that right, Representative Hawker?
I certainly am not going to have any concerns there. There was a reason why we did not do what you did in the CS, but it's the will of the committee.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, do you need a motion to adopt this draft?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the e-version of CS for House Bill 26.
Hearing no objection, if you would, Representative Hawker, go ahead and talk to us about the bill.
Just keeping this brief, this is what's been known as the Adult Dental Services Bill. Up until 2 years ago, until 2007, the way the state's statutes on providing adult dental services for persons over age 21 were that we had an absolutely barbaric standard that in order to provide services under Medicaid, there had to be the occurrence of both acute pain and infection in dental issue. And a bottom line there, that basically meant the only future course of action was root canal type extraction. It was something that, again, was a grave concern. The biggest concern was cost of changing the program into a more contemporary standard of preventative care. 2 years ago, we came up with the concept of and a structure so that we were able to very carefully control the amount of money that was spent on this, as well as define in on both an aggregate annual basis on individual services basis. So that bill passed in 2007. We also put a 2-year sunset on that bill specifically to be back here today reviewing how the process went. Well, the answer is I believe it has gone as well as can be hoped for. The growth in the program was not nearly what was expected out of the originally, the grave fears. And all of a sudden, this would become the next personal care attendant program. We'd have $100 million of general funds spent before you knew it. Not the case. It has grown at a fairly slow base, reasonable pace. The health community, the department worked with us here. They very much would like to, I believe it's a successful experiment, want to extend it. And the point on the extension, or say basically the reauthorization as the bill was originally introduced, would have made it a permanent program. Your CS, I believe, makes it just adds another 5-year limitation to it. The challenge there has been developing a provider base. We quite frankly do not pay dentists an awful lot for this. They can make an awful lot more money dealing with regular insurance clients. And the medical community has been reluctant to participate and offer these services when they think it's a program that's going to be a very limited duration. So that was the rationale that the department brought to us when they asked us to reauthorize this and asked us to reauthorize it permanently. But that's, again, a judgment call here at the committee. But in short, it reauthorizes the adult dental program now for 5 years.
Okay. Just for the record, we started the meeting today with Representative Sisson, Representative Lynn, Representative Herron, co-chair, and then myself, presiding Representative Keller, and we're joined shortly thereafter by Representative Holmes and Representative Seaton. So does the committee have any questions for the sponsor? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hawker, I followed a little bit on the 5-year versus indeterminate amount. Is you have a significant preference on that portion of the bill?
Through the chairs, Representative Seaton. I introduced the bill on a permanent basis. Quite frankly,
I asked myself the question, and I asked myself, "Is this, you know, 5 years from now, are we going to return to the barbaric standard of acute pain and infection, or is this something that what that becomes a, you know, would we just be better off, you know, basically one more at this point in time? Do we have adequate basis for simply internalizing it into the state's Medicaid program?" I felt yes, but again, it's a judgment call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just a comment on that. This is Representative Keller. I chose to take the initiative to put the sunset in the bill simply as so it's a vehicle, so it's discussed. I don't really have real strong feelings one way or the other. It's just that once it's in there, we can, you know, if the committee chooses to take it out, that's fine. And this goes to Representative Hawker's committee after here, so he can do with it as he pleases. And so I slightly prefer leaving it in. I'm not real strong on it. Any other questions?
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
And you know, I sincerely, I respect the work of the committee process, and particularly in that you folks are charged with the HESP Human Services policy. You know, the directions and concern of this committee would something I would very much take into consideration. As you said, it lands in my own committee next, but I would very much respect the direction and concern offered by this committee on that particular topic.
Thank you very much, Representative Rocker. Representative Sista.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And so my question would be, I thought I heard you say, but I'd like to have you repeat, please, that your original concern was that it needed to have a sunset date because it was very possible that people would hear about this and you'd have hordes of people coming and using it to the point that it was very uneconomic for the state to do, and that instead it's been used in a way that showed good preventative strategy by the state. Is that true?
Through the chairman, Representative Sisna, I think you're very much you've encapsulated it, but I would take it so far as that when we made this change 2 years ago, there were many unknowns. You know, it wasn't simply the utilization of the program, but it was also going to be, again, it got to all of those, the costs, the utilization, any number of factors that, again, when we pass a, particularly we pass a bill expanding Medicaid services, you know, one never knows if someone might have found a loophole in it that we didn't know about. So all those unknowns were out there, and we chose a two-year pilot period so, again, we'd be back here today with, I think, an adequate basis to review the program. And again, I think the program has validated itself at this point in time to where I'm comfortable with however the committee would like to go forward. But I really would not like the state to return to the barbaric acute pain and infection standard.
Representative Sesta, follow up.
Thank you, and follow up with you and perhaps also to someone from the administration. Are there ways that the state can be careful in their monitoring this, as we I think learned with personal care attendants, this program and its budget, so that it doesn't suddenly balloon and become something different? And if that were to happen, could that be brought back without a sunset?
Through the chairman, Representative Sisna, this bill simply extends the existing program, including the parameters which were designed around the individual benefit. Was designed to accommodate one half of a denture plate each calendar year, or each fiscal year in this case, so that, you know, again, the individual benefits were limited, and the item, it had been established as a separate appropriation item within the budget, which meant that when we appropriated a certain amount of money into it, there was no other money available for it. So those financial controls remain in place at this time.
Thank you.
Representative Heron first, and Seaton, he asked.
I'll yield to Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that the CS and the original bill, in the title, actually, when the original bill said an act repealing the repeal of the preventive and restorative adult dental services reimbursements under Medicaid, and the new one just says an act relating to adult dental services. Is there any significance to the change in language on those two? I'm just trying to get a handle on the change that's occurred here.
Mr. Chairman, respectfully, Representative Seaton, I think that would be a question for the chairman of your committee.
Reverend Seaton, I don't have a clue, to be honest with you, but the intent that we asked for was a CS that was exactly the same as Representative Seaton's with the sunset in place, because he had not included that. There's another bill in our committee that was, just in case you missed it, from the governor, and the governor's version has the CS. So it was the intent of the chair to get the discussion on the table by including it in the CS.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Hare.
Yes, Representative Hawker. I appreciate the comments you mentioned earlier about respecting the committee process. Yes, because of the fiscal note, it goes back to your committee, and you could slip it back in. Or, you know, obviously. But I guess that's the issue that we've talked about here at this level, is should the Finance Committee dictate Health and Social Services policy rather than the Standing Committee trying to go the other way back up to your committee? I mean, it's your fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the state operates effectively. So I guess with that, considering the finance, the fiscal note, considering Co-Chairman Keller's CS, I guess I'd like you to comment on that statement.
Through the Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we have a committee process in this building, and it operates on the same good faith and trust that we all place in each other. Certainly every committee chairman, every committee member in the subsequent committees have to make their own best judgment on what is the right thing to do. And I don't think there can be quite a universal answer to that. As you know, quite frankly, sometimes as you know, we sit in our committee, we believe the right thing to do may be something other than came through from a previous committee of referral, whether it be additional information garnered. And quite often we end up with a situation where, you know, a legislation will pass out and anticipating that there's going to be more information come to light and changes be made. Again, it's in the sense of, would the Finance Committee, you know, set out to attempt to dictate human service policy? Quite frankly, no. But as a sponsor of this bill, I am attempting to influence human service policy, and I will make the best arguments I can possibly make in what I believe is the proper outcome throughout the process between Committee 1 all the way to the floor. That said, also, I respect the collective aspect of how we operate in this building, and I say this: there are issues that I will fall on my. I assure you, Representative Heron, there are issues in this world I will fall on my sword for and fight you all the way to the governor's office. And there's other issues that are just simply going. It's a judgment call. You know, we look around the room and you say, if my colleagues feel better about it this way, it works very, very well with me. And quite frankly, I believe in the case in this one, that whether it's a permanent repeal or a five-year, again, when I worked with the department earlier this summer, worked with the Mental Health Trust as we got to reauthorizing this, I was very much led to believe that a permanent repeal would actually facilitate the implementation of this program and having providers more willing to participate in it. That seemed to me to be a desired outcome. On the other hand, 5 years is a fair window forward. And, to review it at the end of 5 years, this is not one I've got any great desire to fall on my sword over.
Mr. Chairman, one follow-up.
Representative Heron.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. I appreciate the response. I guess you know the fiscal note. I'm sure you've read it and from the department. Now, going to the CS, would the fiscal note change at all, in your opinion?
Through the chair, Chairman Heron, I do not believe that the fiscal note would change beyond, let's see here, that there would be zeros at the end of it,
yes,
where
sir.
The bill sunsets rather than continues. Although I certainly, as at this exact point, as I understand the CS, that would be the only change.
So just one final one, Mr. Chairman. is do you support the CS, or would you prefer us to seriously consider returning to the original bill?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, as I said before, it's an issue. I mean, I became convinced dealing with the department this summer and the Mental Health Trust. I seek great counsel and value their counsel on implementing, managing this sort of programs. Who convinced me that essentially that the program had passed muster, had the merits had been proven, the cost management had been established, and that a permanent implementation of this was in the best interest of the state, which is why I introduced the bill that way. Yes, I would prefer it that way, because I've become convinced I think that's the right way forward. But you know, in this case, I do respect the fact that you know folks may still want to continue to reassess this program or this component of our Medicaid program. And to that end, again, this is one where I keep waffling on it, but I certainly respect the will of this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coggan. First of all, procedurally, have we adopted the CS?
Yes.
Do I have that in front of me? Do I
should have. Yes, right there in your hand.
This shows the 2014 repeal?
Yes.
Okay. And the other was just taking the repeal off, if I understand correctly.
Permanent. Yeah. One was a repeal.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I can remember the debate in a prior committee, and it seems like years and years ago, but it wasn't that long ago,
yes.
About the dental services. And I got to tell you, I struggled with putting it in to begin with, but I think the case was really made on other costs that happen if this doesn't happen. So I think, Mr. Chairman, we're going to borrow money for everything we do this year. Medicaid is a significant match part of our world. And we're probably going to have to narrow down as a policy question, and that's one of the reasons I'm bringing this debate up, is can we do everything we're doing, or do we have to stop doing something so we can do other things well? And so then I get to the question of, okay, what do you stop doing? And I just want to ask you, do you think that for 50-50 even, that we will stop doing dental care in Alaska under Medicaid services once we've begun? And that's the problem of allowing any new program to get in. First you find out, and I think what we did under this program was first we find out, are we getting the need met? I can tell you, just finding dentists right now is still a tough thing to do. And so when I allowed it to go in, here's what I expected. Once you allow a program in to be a Medicaid program, I do not ever expect that I will be able to retract that. Because you set up an expectation, and that's one of the reasons why I'm always reluctant to increase. In fact, the guy sponsoring this bill has another bill that I will probably fight very vehemently. if you've adopted the CS, I would speak more in favor of adopting the original bill as he presented it, because I think we don't have the guts to stop a program. Well, now, if we're going to do it and we're going to say, okay, are we getting enough dentists, we're going to ask that question every year when the bill comes our way. And so if you really want to know, are we getting bang for the buck, we're going to ask that every year, at least those of you who remain here should you get elected again. So I'm just convinced that once you start down this road, you're not going to come back. And so I would speak against sunsetting it just for that very reason.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, it's really a dangerous thing to even, question someone that's endorsing your position. But I would point out that, we have as a legislature, when programs, well-intended programs, have gotten out of line in Medicaid, we have stepped in, and sometimes it takes a while to wheel that battleship around, but I look at the personal care attendant program that was so rife with abuse. And in the past 6 years, we have turned what was the most single escalating out-of-control program into one that we've actually had reduced costs, along with the support of the provider community who themselves wanted to make sure the program maintained the highest levels of integrity. So while I certainly agree with the philosophic concern, I do want to emphasize that the legislature that we serve in has had the discipline to make some of the right calls as well. So I, you know, again, we have to trust ourselves.
And Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't disagree with that, but when it comes to the Medicaid budget, we have been reluctant to change services other than growing them. And this was a growth we put in last go around, and firmly convinced that there are those people who are worthy of more than emergency care, because emergency care is becoming expensive times. Well, I don't know what the exponent was, but it was significantly higher. And so this actually brings the best bang for the buck. That's why I don't ever see us turning this one back. Now, we might want to significantly change other programs, and I'm willing to do that.
But by the way, for the record, Representative Coghill joined us about 3:20. better late than never. Representative Sista.
Thank you. And to Representative Coghill's comments, I think it was the year this was passed, I was out in the Aleutians, and the healthcare workers were telling me out there that that their most expensive medevacs appeared to be the dental ones, and that the kinds of things that happened to people because of tooth infection when you're so far away from services were really extraordinarily expensive to the communities, and that is only part of the costs, I understand, but. And on to the point that Representative Coghill made about Medicaid and the expense of Medicaid and the reluctance and the inability, actually, usually to move away from it, this bill actually has preventative components that oftentimes are not available in Medicaid. Medicaid doesn't normally, it usually is there after the problem has come in place, and then it stays there to keep people from dying. But this one actually has a real heavy preventative component, and I think that's important.
Representative Holmes?
Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank you for bringing the CS in front of us, because I think we're having exactly the discussion that we ought to be having, which is, do we continue the program, and if so, do we put a sunset in it, or do we just let it go? And I think, and my thought on it is, there are a lot of things we sunset around here, for instance, boards and commissions and that sort of thing, a lot of times would never come up again if we didn't sunset them. We'd never go back and look at the Bar Association or the group that oversees engineers or a lot of these things, because we don't really have a line item, we don't talk about them at budget time. So we make that decision to sunset them so that they'll have to kind of come back. This program, I think, is different in that we look through the health and social services, and it was priorly under the under Representative Hawker here and now under Representative Jewell. We look pretty in-depth into that budget every year. And I think this is the type of program that we're going to be checking up on automatically through that process anyway. And so the normal function, in my view, of a sunset, of sort of giving us the opportunity and making us make that judgment call every few years, is not necessarily needed in this context, because I think there's an avenue for it anyway. And for that reason, I think I would advocate returning to the original bill, because I think we'll still have that opportunity.
That's fine. And what we'll do is we'll get to that, of course, when we do the bill action. Right now, is there any more questions on the content of the bill? If not, we'll go to public testimony. Thank you, Representative
Mr. Chairman.
Hawker.
I appreciate members of the committee.
I think we'll go first to Anchorage. We have Reagan Mattingly. Anchorage, you there?
Hi, thank you. This is Reagan Mattingly with the Alaska Primary Care Association. The Alaska Primary Care Association represents 26 healthcare organizations, which operate 141 healthcare delivery sites that serve primary healthcare to over 80,000 Alaskans across the state. The APCA supports House Bill 26 and reauthorizing the adult dental services under the Medicaid program. Oral health care is critical for overall health, and adults in the Medicaid program receiving access to dental services reduces the likeliness that they'll develop more expensive and acute dental problems in the future. We urge you to support this program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Reagan. Let's go to Kodiak, Don Roberts. Yeah, state your name and who you're representing, and give us your testimony, please.
My name is Don Roberts. I live here in Kodiak. I represent myself, and I absolutely support this on a personal level. When I have dental pain and I need dental care, I'm an absolute miserable person to be around. And I don't know about you, but if I'm looking for a job and trying to get a job, I simply can't make a good first impression if I've got dental pain. I'm not focused. I don't act well. I don't look well. I'm usually tired and very, very just a very tedious person to be around. So aside from the pain part, this stuff goes right through, you know, what you're trying to accomplish. If you want people applying for and having a chance at getting better paying jobs, they need this taken care of when they need it taken care of, not when the pain gets really bad, which could be months down the road. On a separate twist of irony, this is a program that at this present time I will never qualify for. I'm currently on SSDI, Federal Disability Program, but by some twist of fate, because I also derive income from a VA benefit, a service-connected disability, my income puts me over any Medicaid requirements. So I'll never qualify for this program. But the twist is here, I can't find any dental program. I can't find any dental care because I have a service-connected disability. Had I been dishonorably discharged, I probably could get it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Don. Any questions from the committee? We'll go to Delissa Culpepper.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Delissa Culpepper. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and the co-chair of the Alaska Dental Action Coalition. Here today for both organizations to support the reauthorization of the Adult Dental Medicaid program. As the sponsor alluded, we were very supportive of establishing this program. Our beneficiaries definitely are a large number of them on Medicaid and benefit from this. Now I'm going to suspend some of the other statistics and other things and address some of the issues you've been talking about having to do with why both the Alaska Dental Action Coalition and the Trust have been supporting reauthorization without a sunset. We're also probably not willing to fall on our sword for a five-year reauthorization, but I believe that many of the points that some of the committee members have been making and the sponsor, that this program is part of Medicaid on the adult side. It does get reviewed, can be controlled, the cost of it can be controlled through the budget items every year in increments and decrements. We've heard this year that they actually had a problem with some things because it wasn't part of the larger program. They couldn't move, you know, money around to cover anything. And I think that that's a good reason not to leave it as a separate thing year after year and be able to control it as part of the general Medicaid budget. I don't believe it's something, as a sponsor and other committee members alluded, that we would ever do away with prevention and taking care of dental problems ahead of time. Saves all the other things that we've already talked about, but I think we need to seriously consider from a policy issue whether or not a five-year sunset is worthwhile, or whether or not we just want to reauthorize this and then learn and then control it as we control our parts of the Medicaid budget through the budget authorizations every year. Thank you.
Thank you, Delissa. Any questions? Elaine Rath, if you go right ahead, give your name and who you represent and your testimony, please.
Thank you, Representative Herron and Representative Keller and members of the committee. I'm Elena Rath of Ketchikan. Thank you for your public service. I'm associated with the Alaska Brain Injury Network and Rendezvous Senior Day Services here in town, and we're voicing support of House Bill 26, the reauthorization of the Medicaid Adult Dental Program. This program is scheduled to end this year. We support it as it would extend the program beyond the sunset and hopefully beyond 2010. What's especially important about this bill is the preventive dental services it provides, and that 40% of the services in this program are utilized by seniors. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Elaine. And I'm going to take opportunity to let you know that the SCR1 is a Brain Injury Awareness Month bill that's coming over. The next meeting we'll have here in this committee, we'll be hearing that March 3rd. So,
great. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine. Is there anybody in the room to testify? That's all I believe we have online, HB 26. If you would, state your name and affiliation and go for it.
Thank you. For the record, I'm John Sherwood with the Department of Health and Social Services.
Brad Whistler, Dental Officer for Health and Social Services.
And thank you for this opportunity to testify. The department does support the extension of the adult dental program, and the administration's preference is for the five-year sunset, as was mentioned by Representative Coghill earlier. When we initially proposed to add the adult dental, we did present it with the expectations that we would see some long-term savings. As we got close to this date, we determined that we did not yet have conclusive data to confirm that we were achieving those savings. We think the five-year sunset would allow us to gather more data and actually confirm our representation of cost effectiveness. However, that said, we could live without a sunset date. We just would like the opportunity to bring our data in and revisit the discussion when we have better data. And Brad is here to talk a little more about the specifics of the dental benefits.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to talk on House Bill 26. Since Representative Hawker is still here on a personal note, I would just like to acknowledge Representative Hawker's role in working through the session to get the enabling legislation for these services in place last time, and also thank those legislators that dealt with this in 2006 to get the services in place. I think people have touched on a few of the issues with adult dental services and changing from the previous level of services of emergency services for relieving pain and acute infection. Good oral health is a quality of life issue. Pain from dental infections can result in missed work. Decayed and missing teeth can affect employment and job advancement opportunities. And Alaska, like nationwide, has seen a growth in the service industry, customer service industry. Person with decayed or missing filled teeth, especially those in the front of their mouth, can really impact their job opportunities. For Alaska seniors, dentures, ill-fitting dentures or lack of dentures can result in less healthy food choices. You're looking at blended or pureed foods or mashed potatoes in terms of things that are easy to eat without teeth. So I think we've highlighted some that this has provided dentures for many Alaskans that didn't have dentures or had ill-fitting dentures. And then coverage of preventive and routine restorative dental services before dental decay has the chance to advance and involve the pulp of the tooth has made it where it reduction in terms of missing the need to extract teeth. And we don't have all the information on that in terms of looking at it, but certainly in terms of if you looked at the root canal therapy procedures that were covered under the services, under the previous level of services, those would have been extracted teeth. And once a tooth is extracted, the alternatives of replacing that tooth are expensive, whether we're talking about doing crown and bridge, or we're talking about implants, which are not covered under these services, or a partial denture in terms of doing that. And then finally, I see these services as part of the puzzle in terms of looking at trying to reduce dental decay in the Medicaid population. I think if those of you that have heard the information on the Alaska Native population and the rates of decay, dental screenings that the department has done has also highlighted high levels of dental decay in other racial ethnic minorities here in the state, including Asian children and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander. And for the bacteria that are involved with dental decay, the bacteria are typically transmitted parent, caregiver to child. And so in terms of having a program that was offering dental services for children while we weren't offering preventive and routine restorative for adults, you're contributing to sort of that avenue of how the disease is transmitted. At the same time, we talk about the importance of adults to get their kids in for dental care early before it's more involved dental care and more expensive dental care, and having the previous level of the program where we weren't really covering much for adults doesn't fit with that message. You know, on one hand, we're saying your children's teeth are important. On the other hand, for the adults, not so much. So I think these services have really, it's a fit with overall prevention in the state. I agree with the comments that Representative Hawker made. I would not want to see us return to the level that we had. But as John touched on, in terms of some of the information, there's been discussions around the annual limit, if it's adequate under the current approach. If we exceed fiscal note projections, we would be lowering the annual limit, and that would still be the case under this bill. But in terms of all of those issues that come up, we need the bill to pass this session. Without action, these services sunset June 30th, 2009. And the other thing I would just say is that under the sunset as scheduled in this committee substitute, there would be the opportunity for someone to introduce legislation in the 2013 session, and we would have 2 years to sort of work through the other details of the program rather than being in the situation which we are now to rush this through. So we definitely want to see a version of this reauthorization passed this year, and I'll stop there unless there's any questions.
Is there questions for the department? Representative Seed.
Thank you. On the question of expansion of facilities and whether more dentists would tend to participate if there's a five-year sunset or without a five-year sunset, or if there is a five-year sunset, could you address that issue for me and kind of give me the amount of dental expansion that you would see in an unlimited program versus a five-year program, and whether you think that that's going to be significant for us?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I think it would be a ballpark estimate at best to sort of predict that. But what I would say is, in terms of these original services having a two-year sunset, for even community health centers or tribal programs, that narrow window makes it pretty difficult to make the commitment that you're going to hire an extra dentist to deliver services on a program that's only going to last 2 years and you don't know where it's going from there. I think the reauthorization would speak to where the legislature feels about these services now and the five-year window. People could start planning around that in terms of the public programs to bring on additional providers to deliver services. In terms of private dentists, you know, the issues around this are not, you know, solely around this reauthorization and adult services. Other things that they're concerned about include reimbursement, the increasing levels of audits that we see in terms of the federal programs and being subjected more to that. So there's other issues out there that result in whether private providers are deciding to expand their participation in their Medicaid or participate at all. So in terms of the reauthorization of these services, I think it would help for those that are engaged in Medicaid making decisions for staffing and to deliver the services, but I don't think this is the only issue that's going to decide participation in the program.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton?
Actually, with another question.
Go ahead, that's fine.
I noticed on the fiscal note it says the total program costs are controlled by spending limits set by the legislature, ensuring that total program spending remains within the budgeted amount. If we're talking about the program not being at all separate, if allocated Medicaid money runs out, does that mean that it's just first come, first serve between this and Denali Kid Care? And that, I mean, does everything get lumped together if we don't have a sunset? And then do we just prorate the care for, let's say, from February on if we anticipate a drop in or not enough revenue to sustain that?
Well, yeah, if you would state your name whenever you speak, because the recorder has a hard time.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, this is Brad Whistler. I would have to say I'm not absolutely certain in terms of if the intent is to still keep this as a separate appropriation or if it would be lumped in with the Medicaid program. What I can say is how this was designed to work is if during the current fiscal year we're projecting that we're going to exceed the fiscal note, then we would be going out to emergency regulations to lower the annual limit per recipient in the succeeding fiscal year to make up for what we were going to overexpend in the current fiscal year and also then offset the anticipated increased expenditure in the subsequent fiscal year. So that at the level it would be done as is in terms of what level of dental services we'd offer on a recipient basis. So right now that limit is 1,150. We would be lowering that if we saw the projection that we were going to exceed the current year appropriation for the services.
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Well, I guess I was hearing a couple different things. One is if it's rolled into the Medicaid services. The question is, did that, without a sunset, did that roll in and then become part of a single unitized amount so that if there wasn't enough money for Medicaid in a year that all services would be prorated, or does this need to have the fiscal note attached and have this sunset to keep it as a separate program for funding? And I don't know the answer to this question. I'm totally asking
this. Through the chair, I believe the decision about whether to budget this as a separate appropriation or as part of the overall Medicaid appropriation is separate from the sunset legislation and whether or not there's a sunset provision isn't controlling in this. So that's my understanding, that's a separate decision in the budget process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That answered my question.
Any other questions from the committee for the department? I wasn't here when the we expanded to include the dental, so maybe you can help me out in understanding how seniors qualify. At what age, I mean, do they go to Medicare at a certain point, and do we have a waiver that has expanded Medicaid to include elderly, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair, almost all seniors at age 65 become eligible for Medicare, and some people with disabilities become eligible for Medicare sooner than that. Low-income individuals who are aged or disabled can also qualify for Medicaid, and Medicare is the payer of first resort, and we're the payer of last resort. But generally speaking, Medicare doesn't cover dental services, so low-income seniors who are dually eligible may not have the financial means to pay for dental services without Medicaid. We do cover a substantial number of seniors in the Medicaid program. It's a significant part of our adult dental would be covering people who are dually Medicare Medicaid eligible.
Thank you. Representative Seaton, another question.
Thank you. We have in the rural Alaska dental therapist, I believe is the terminology. Is that covered under this, or is that a totally separate funding source?
This is Brad Whistler through the chair, Representative Seaton. The dental therapist program would be part of the overall tribal dental program. So in terms of services provided to tribal beneficiaries, it would not work different for adults than it would for children or anybody else served by the tribal program. So in terms of this, no, there's not a separate funding for the dental therapist program. It would be part of the billing from tribal programs as it relates to dental services.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Oh, wait.
For them, for you.
Okay.
The intentions of the committee on the bill today, are we going to consider it for motion today, or?
That's a negative. before we came in, both bills we're going to hear the testimony, and then hold off for another committee for action. So.
Okay, because the question I have with others is whether or not we would want to proceed with this version or not, and so. I will consider that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on HB 26? Come on up and welcome. If you would, please state your name and give us your testimony.
Ms. Marie Darlin, and I'm the coordinator of the AARP Capital City Task Force. And you already have received a letter from us, which should be in your files, saying that we support the continuation of the adult dental bill, because it was one that we worked very hard on in previous years, and so we'd just like to be sure that it is continued. And the letter, I'm sure, addresses the first bill, not your amendment that you have now. So I guess our support is going to be to continue it, and if you have to discuss the idea of whether or not there's going to be a sunset, that's up to what decision you make. We just want to say we support the continuation of it, because we know that it's important and it does come back to being more of the preventive aspects that we're always working on.
Thank you. Any other testimony on HB 226? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. And what we're going to do is keep this CS in front of the committee until the committee takes action. At such time, you know, we'll have time to have thought about it and then consider whether or not we want to go back to the original version of the bill and when we discuss it.
That will be the debate time, Mr. Chairman.
That will be the debate time, yes. Representative Herron.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I appreciate the sponsor sponsoring this bill and the discussion, but this was a decision that myself and Representative Keller had. We specifically wanted to adopt the governor's CS so we could have this debate, and I thank everyone for testifying today.
Thank you. So if it's okay, now we'll press on to HB2, which is birth certificates for stillborn. It's Representative Carl Gatto's bill, and I believe we have Sandra Wilson here to tell us about the bill, and go right ahead. Give us, state your name, and go ahead.
All right. For the record, my name is Sandra Wilson. I'm staff to Representative Gatto. HB2 allows parents who have had stillborn children to get a birth certificate that reflects the birth of their child.
Excuse me again, Sandra. I'm sorry I'm butting in here, but we have a CS in front of us on this one, too. And I was wondering, is there a motion to accept the CS?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'll move that we adopt the CS for House Bill number 2. That would be 26-LS-0003 / R.
Okay, and I'll object just so you can explain what it's about. And I'll deal with that later, so go ahead.
Would you like me to present the bill first? Or
explain what the differences are right now.
Okay, the difference between the original bill and the CS you have before you is it removes what was... It removes the section. It was a duplication of records. It required Vital Statistics to keep records of the birth certificate that they print up and then give to the parents, and we were asked by Vital Statistics to remove that.
So it was essentially a dual record that is being eliminated in the CS.
Correct. Yeah. The information that will go on to the birth certificate is already all the information is on the fetal death certificate, and that's where they'll get the information from. And so the Department of Vital Statistics had asked us to remove that particular section of the bill that would require them to keep on file a copy of the birth certificate that they've made.
Okay. Did I understand that there's somebody here from the Department of Vital Statistics to, if there's questions on that later?
That's correct.
Okay, great. So if you would go ahead with the explanation of the CS, I remove my objection.
Okay. The purpose of this bill is to bring closure to the parents who have had stillborn children. Currently, parents who have had a stillborn children receive a fetal death certificate. Not all the hospitals or nurses are aware of the proper procedure, and I've heard many stories from parents of receiving a birth certificate for their child to fill out, and a nurse will come back 20 minutes or an hour later and apologize for giving them the wrong form and then ask them to fill out a fetal death certificate. And the parents have just lost their child, and it's just crushing to have to fill out a fetal death certificate. Allowing them to get a birth certificate for their child validates they had a child, and it would bring closure to the parents. The certificate's completely optional. It would be up to the parents to request it from Vital Statistics. And that's basically what the bill does.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Okay. What we're going to do is go to public testimony on this one also, and we're going to use the same basic process. We probably won't get into debate of the bill today or amendments, but we'll have opportunity for that next time. So we did it that way because we didn't know exactly how much public testimony there would be, and so we'll stick with it. So. First of all, I think we'll go online. We have Rhonda Crawford from Anchorage, or I guess Soldotna, right? Would you state your name for the record, please, and who you're representing, and go right ahead.
My name is Rhonda Crawford. I'm representing myself and a couple of close friends that this has happened to. And I just think this is something that, in general, people don't think about unless you've gone through it. I understand there is no additional cost to the state or to taxpayers, but I can tell you that that it would bring is immense, because I carried my daughter full term and I went in for a simple test and they could not find a heartbeat. And so I made the decision to deliver her by C-section. Nobody in the hospital had ever experienced a stillbirth or not being able to find a heartbeat. And there was a lot of avoidance from the staff. And just like Sandra Wilson had just said, the first thing that happened at 4:30 in the morning, a nurse came in and woke me up out of a dead sleep and asked me what I wanted to do with the body, because there was no cold storage in the hospital. A couple hours after that, a nurse came in, asked me to fill out paperwork for a birth certificate, and a half an hour later showed up with different paperwork for a death certificate because it was the wrong paperwork. Shortly after that, the funeral home arrived and gave me price quotes on cremation and burial, and this wasn't what I was planning on doing. I wanted, to take this baby home. I wanted to be changing diapers and taking pictures. And to go through a pregnancy and to leave the hospital empty-handed is really, really tough. And I still haven't been able to pick up her death certificate yet. And to be able to have a certificate showing that, just if only briefly, she existed, if even to me and my family, it would mean a lot.
Thank you, Rhonda. Are we done?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Now we'll go to, is there any questions from the committee? Or
I'd like to ask how long ago this.
How long ago was this, Rhonda?
5 years.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go back online to Michelle Hoyt. Do you have, are you there?
Yes, thank you, committee. My daughter, Haley,
if you would first state your name and who you're, thank you.
Michelle Hoyt, I live in the Metsu Valley. My daughter, Haley Inez, was born to me on March 30th, 2004. I gave a natural birth to her on that day. She was full term. Granted, she was born dead. I still had to go through the birthing process. At that same time, I had to go through the grieving process also. Unfortunately, the state will only acknowledge that she died on that day. How can you have a death certificate without a birth certificate? Yet I had to experience the birthing process, the milk drying up, the baby fat, the depression, the going home with no child, the funeral arrangements, right along with the hospital bills of having a child. I ask you to support this bill to bring closure to many grieving parents in that the state acknowledges a child was actually born to them, that their child was a human being, and brought into this world like every other child around us. Granted, the grieving will never end, but at least we can have a positive piece of paper about the loss of our child. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Joanne Catch-Story?
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for...
state your name, please, and who you represent.
Sure. My name is Dr. Joanne Catch-Story. I am the CEO and founder of the Miss Foundation, and I'm an assistant professor. My area of research is on traumatic child death in families and the intergenerational effects on women and their families. And I represent 76 state chapters of the MISS Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization, all volunteer, we help families whose children die, including stillbirths. About 60% of our families have experienced the stillbirth of their baby. That is the birth of a baby who has died during or just prior to birth. Most of these are at or near full term, otherwise apparently healthy babies, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, sometimes 11-pound babies that die. In about 60% of the cases, they die for undiagnosable causes, even after a full postmortem evaluation. The effects of this on families is incredibly devastating. I would ask on behalf of hundreds of thousands of MISS Foundation families that the committee and Alaska legislators support this very, very important piece of legislation, as have 26 other states in the United States passed. It does not cost anything to the state. In fact, in Arizona, it has been revenue-generating, and in other states, it's been revenue-generating. Was passed last year in six other states, including California. And overwhelmingly, this has become an issue that is popular and supported by the public. It is an important issue to these families, and it's the right thing to do to acknowledge that these women carried and gave birth to their babies, and that they were loved and important in their family history and in their lives. Thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions regarding it.
Thank you, Joanne. Would you tell us the name of the foundation again, please?
Certainly. It's the MISS Foundation, M-I-S-S Foundation.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Debbie Joslin, online, go ahead, state your name and give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chairman Keller. This is Debbie Joslin, and I'm president of Eagles Forum Alaska. I'm calling from Delta Junction, Alaska. I'm calling because I represent families, and this is an important bill, and I would ask the committee to pass it. I gave birth 10 years ago to a little boy, and he was born alive. We weren't sure if he was going to be, but we were very blessed that he lived for 32 days. And because he didn't die until he was 32 days old, we did get a birth certificate. I have to say, it had deceased stamped across it in big, bold red letters. I would have preferred we didn't do that, but we did that. But I look at the many, many women I know who've had stillborn babies, and the grief it is for them not to be able to have that birth certificate. And in years past, you know, when there was a stillborn baby, women weren't even many times allowed to see that baby, and they weren't encouraged to give their baby a name, and it was, they were treated as though nothing had happened, and people were very hush-hush about it. We didn't talk about it, and I know a lot of women who are still not to terms with the hurt that they experienced many, many years ago because it wasn't treated as though their child actually ever lived. And I think we've come a long way since then. But I think the next step that needs to be taken is that we help women acknowledge that they did give birth to somebody. And like the other lady said, if we've got a death certificate, certainly somebody must have been born. And I think that when you go home from the hospital with empty arms, you ought to at least be able to bring home a birth certificate. And so I would urge the committee to pass the bill.
Okay, thank you, Debbie. I believe that's all we have online. We'll go here to the in the room. Philip, you're from the Bureau?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. I think we'll save you to last. We got Mamie here. Mamie, is it? Am I saying it right?
Yes.
Okay, coming up. And state your name,
you
please.
Borrow one of these.
I want you to know that was totally unfair to save me till after all those other testimonies. My name is Mamie Onimus, and I am the grandmother of a stillborn child. Our granddaughter was delivered in March 5th of 2006. She was 10 pounds and a half ounce. She was 21 and a half inches long. You know, when our son was born, we didn't know the sex. We didn't even name him for 3 days after he was born because we were still kind of, you know, in shock. But our granddaughter, we knew the sex in November, and she had a name, Evan Nicole Onimus. We had sonogram pictures of her. Our daughter-in-law was so good to keep us totally informed, and part of this whole process of her carrying the baby, and it was really neat. For Christmas, she gave us a series of 3D pictures of the baby. This was such a devastating blow to have to find out the baby's heartbeat had stopped just a day before her scheduled C-section. She was 3 weeks overdue. She was a big baby. The autopsy, we learned that she had suffocated. And it just was devastating for us to watch our daughter-in-law and our son go home empty-handed. You heard one testimony that the mother was 5 years since hers. Ours has been 3 years, and it is still just as hurtful today to think that our children had to suffer this. As a parent, you can take a lot of pain, but I'll tell you, when your kids are going through the pain, it's unbelievable, much more difficult and more hurtful. Anyway, my daughter-in-law really expressed how hard it was to put a death certificate in her baby book, and I saw the baby book. It was loaded with all of the things that she had gathered and prepared before they lost the baby. And I just thought, if it means this much to her to have a stillbirth certificate, the least I could do as a mother-in-law is to be here and testify for her and show that these babies, it's not just the parents, it's the aunts, the uncles, the cousins, and the grandparents that suffered the loss of these children. So I really urge you to support this bill and give the parents and the families some comfort in knowing that their child has been treated with some real respect and not just given a death certificate. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your heartfelt testimony. Philip, if you would come up and state in your own words why we have the CS and see if there's any questions on that. Thank you.
For the record, Philip Mitchell, Department of Health and Social Services. I'm the state registrar for Alaska. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for taking time to listen to me today. Basically, I was asking that Section F be removed for three reasons. And the first reason is we already have the information we need to issue a certificate of birth resulting in stillbirth. We just need the authority to go ahead and issue the certificate. And creating the record when we already have that information would be additional work for our staff, and we've worked really hard to make sure that there would be no fiscal impact to the state over this bill. And then finally, we've worked hard with Representative Gatto's staff. You have an example of the certificate we plan on issuing, but one thing you don't have is, this is the last real good copy I have, is there's a gold seal on it, which we plan on stamping the state seal. And this can only be done in Juneau, so the requests for these certificates will have to come to Juneau anyway. And for those reasons, it was really to minimize any possible fiscal impact to the state, and also to make sure that the parents could get the certificate that, as you've heard, they so desperately want.
Thank you, Philip. Any questions? thank you. Like I say, we're going to hold the bill and act on it next time, but I want to assure everybody listening that I would expect very little problem. Last year it went whistling through the House with the reason we wait is it gives us a chance to answer any questions that might be in our mind, contemplate what we're going to do in amendments. We don't always have that luxury, but early in the session we're going to do it. So We'll wait and hold action on the bill later. Any other final comments from the committee? Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just while we have the people who testified online or in the audience, I just want to say, although I consider myself fortunate not to have gone through it, I have family friends who lost babies 40 years ago, went on to have healthy children, and they still mourn. So I want to thank everybody for their heartfelt testimony. I know it's heartbreaking when it happens.
Representative Heron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to follow Representative Holmes' comments. I want to extend our sympathy and to the people that testified on this very difficult issue. Difficult meaning that the people that testified had the courage to come and share their life story, and I'd like to thank them very much for that.
Thank you. Like I said earlier, the next committee meeting will be on March 3rd at 3 p.m., and we'll be looking and talking about SCR1 and Brain Injury Awareness Month 2009, which is in March. So that's what's ahead of us. And I want to thank Representative Gatto and you, Sandra, for your hard work on this bill. And with that, the meeting is adjourned at 4:20.